Okay, cool. Thanks a lot. And thank you very much, Michaela, for inviting me here for this week. So I'm going to be here until, I think, Friday. I'm going to be leaving on Friday. And I'm a PhD student of Frank Castratis in, oops, the pointer does have certain advantages, in Frank Castratis group in Vienna. And I'm going to be talking about quantum metropolis sampling, or different title could be how to pair thermal or ground states of generic quantum Hamiltonians on a quantum computer. So this is joint work together with Tobias Osborne, with Karl-Gerd Vollbrecht, with David Poulon in Sherbrooke, and with my supervisor, Frank Verstraten. So if you're interested, the paper's on the archive currently. So I will just basically give a brief motivation of what we do or why we do what we do. Then I will try to walk you through the steps of the quantum algorithm. And then I will take some time to explain what are some key points or some points in the analysis of the algorithm, and comment on the runtime of the algorithm. And then I'll conclude with giving a very, very simple possible implementation schema for 5 qubits. So as the motivation, if you really go back to the original motivation of why we even wanted to build a quantum computer, then the motivation was actually just to simulate quantum physics on a quantum computer, right? And the only thing I would like to point out here is that there are actually two points to simulating quantum physics. So you could ask for the question of simulating actually the dynamics of the quantum system. Say you're able to prepare some initial state and then look at the evolution of the system. But there's also the other point, too, where you can ask for static properties. So, for instance, if you were to go to some condensed matter physicist and he says, well, I want to compute the magnetization or something, this is a question that is not being answered by dynamics. And this is basically what we try to solve with this algorithm. So in principle, it's very simple. The only thing you have to do, essentially, is just to solve the many-body Schrodinger equation, which, of course, is very hard to do. So there are three approaches one could think of tackling the problem. So what has been basically done up till now is basically try to look for classical means of simulating that and certain limits with different techniques. Then another approach one could think of is to build a quantum simulator, essentially, where you say you just take a different quantum mechanical system which you can tune and which you can play with. And this is supposed then to simulate the other quantum systems. So one example for that would be, for instance, an optical lattice to simulate the Hubbard model, as an example. And what we're going to be talking about is the simulation of quantum systems if you have a universal quantum computer. So what possible algorithms you can do. So if we go back to what are the things that have been done in that direction. So basically, people in 1996 looked at the dynamics and showed that you could basically implement the evolution of any local Hamiltonian efficiently in a quantum computer. Again, this is only dynamics, but that already helps to some extent, right? So what you can do, for instance, you can use this to prepare ground states by adiabatic time evolution. You can start in some simple state and then evolve to a more complex one, if that works for some instances. Or you could try to prepare the Gibbs state by just looking at the joint evolution of say, I evolve my subsystem and I kind of do what nature does. I adjoin another bath and they evolve jointly until the supposed system thermalizes, right? So, but these are not the approaches we want to do. What we want to do is something different, which is more along the lines of what you would actually do with a classical computer for classical statistical mechanics problems. Okay, so what we want is essentially want to build up a circuit with including measurements and everything that suppose you provide a general many-body Hamiltonian, then this circuit should spit out eigenstates of the Hamiltonian according to the Boltzmann weights, right? And now you could start sampling from these eigenstates of the Hamiltonian and then compute the empirical average like you do with the classical metropolis algorithm and get the answer up to a statistical error. Okay, so just probably this is owls to Athens, but I'd really briefly like to repeat the metropolis algorithm. So what you essentially do is you try to compute averages, for example, for the Ising model, and in order to to generate samples from the distribution, what you do is you set up a stochastic map that converges to your Gibbs state distribution. You can check that this is a fixed point distribution or the desired fixed point distribution by having a detailed balance condition, which you can check locally, and you're basically all set. So you have to run this algorithm and hope that it converges. Okay. So we just go through the basic steps because we try to quantize that later. So what you have to do is basically you have to start in some configuration of the system, then propose a new update of the configuration. You're able to compute the energy of these configurations usually because that's something local. And then you have to cook up a probability of either accepting or rejecting this new configuration. So you accept the new state with this given probability W, or you reject it with a complement. So we try to do the same thing for a quantum mechanical system, right? So and there are three questions that are being posed a priori. So the first question is, well, how do we prepare eigenstates? The next one is, how do we construct local moves between all these eigenstates like we did in the classical case? And then how do we implement this accept and reject step? So the preparation of general eigenstates is easy. You just do phase estimation, right? Then the local moves are actually, if you want to go from one to the other, are of course impossible. What you can do is you can generate coherent superpositions of eigenstates by just applying any unitary to some other eigenstate. Right? And now the actual tricky part about this is how do you implement this accept-reject step, right? Because what you do is you have to measure the system, and these are usually a destructive operation, so you're not able to undo them easily. And this is actually where most of the work goes in. So just to show why this is so tricky, we go for the very naive approach. So suppose you do quantum phase estimation, you generate some eigenstate, you would prepare a new superposition, and then you do again phase estimation determining the energy, and you collapse in another eigenstate. You have a transition with these transition probabilities to another eigenstate, and then you can check whether you actually want to accept or reject. So you compute the acceptance probability, and if you decide to accept, then you're fine. However, you have a big problem if you want to reject, and you have to want to go back to the original guy because this is literally impossible. So the reject step fails because we cannot undo this measurement. So why is that? It's just because we asked for too much information. So we want the entire energy of the new state. And in the end, we actually just need to have an answer to a binary question. Do you want to accept it or reject it? So actually, we only need to measure a single qubit in order to decide on whether you want to accept or whether you want to reject. And you need not the entire energy. So in order to that, we basically cooked up this circuit. Right? So suppose now we have five registers. There are two registers we need for phase estimation. Then we need one register that stores the actual states, and this is then our accept or reject bits. So suppose we have done a phase estimation. We know what the energy is. We have prepared some eigenstate, and then we do the first step, as we did before. We create a coherent superposition. So as will turn out later, we can choose the superposition randomly, like you can choose the local updates in terms of a Metropolis rule randomly. The only constraint that we need to require is that the probability of applying C has to be equal to the probability of applying its conjugate, so as to satisfy a quantum version of detailed balance, right? So suppose you apply this, you generate a new superposition, and from this superposition, we just check the new energies, right? So in principle, we would be back. We would be as far as before if we just start measuring the second energy and we introduce that transition. But this is not what we want to do. So we keep this coherently, and we do this the other way around. So what we do coherently is then we generate a coherent superposition of the two instances of whether we want to accept the state or whether we want to reject the state by rotating this accept reject qubit according to this Metropolis rule essentially. Right? So then in the end, the only thing we need to do now in deciding whether accept or reject, we have to measure the last qubit, which is just one qubit. Okay, suppose we measure the last single qubit, then we prepare the accept part, and then we measure the energy, preparing the new eigenstate. This is one way, and this is basically, we're lucky and it works. Now, suppose we try to reject, then we measure the second qubit in zero, and we've generated this superposition, which clearly is not yet what we initially wanted. It's just it's not the initial state we started from. So we have to ask the question, how do we get back to what we have done, essentially? And the idea is, essentially, we try to do a non-deterministic rejection step. So we try to go back and ask the question, am I back yet or am I not back? And have another binary measurement, essentially saying back or not back, which is then, again, measuring only one qubit. And for this one, has to prepare, essentially, another projector. So what we have is, essentially, we have two projectors, if you can think about it. This is the first one, where you say, well, what I basically, this projector checks on whether I want to accept or whether I want to reject. And you can ask the other projector, it's just a projector back on the old energy subspace. Okay? So what you could do now, if you have this previous superposition, you can start now measuring the energy and ask, oh, well, am I back to the original guy or not? And if you're not, then, well, you prepare that guy again. So what you do, you alternatively measure QP, 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 and keep on going and according to this interaction graph, right? So suppose you start with an arbitrary state, you collapse into one eigenstate with a given energy. You measure that you accept. Then this L indicates you clean everything up, and you have accepted, and you're fine. You start again, proposing the next metropolis. Suppose you reject it. Then you do, am I back or am I not back, the measurement. If you're back, then you're fine, and you have successfully rejected the state. In the next step, you again, if you fail to reject, you again prepare these two guys by either measuring Q1 or Q0, and you go down this path several times until you really end up in one of these final leaves. Okay? So this is in principle, this could go on forever, right? You could check, I try it, and I don't succeed. I try it again, I don't succeed, and so forth. But the question is, well, how long does this take? And there's something really nice that has been made use of quite a couple of times. Basically, it's the nice form due to Jordan lemma, in which you can bring two projectors simultaneously, for which you can say, so check that. So essentially, you can get two projectors in the same basis as a sum of 2x2 blocks, or as we wrote there, basically just a 2x2 block where the D is a diagonal matrix. So what you effectively do is you effectively work in a two-dimensional subspace all the time. And so what you do is essentially you either prepare the eigenstates of the P guy, so the one checking the energy, which is again a superposition of two states of the old guy, or vice versa, because you can write them both ways. So what you essentially do is you start bouncing between a total of four states until you hit the right one. So, and if you then compute the probability of not getting back after M steps, subsequent measurements of M steps, then you see that this probability is bounded by this number. So D star is some number between 0 and 1. And you see that essentially it decays exponentially in that number. So yeah, there's a very good number of bounds you have to a number of times you have to try that. And the probability that you fail after M steps decays exponentially, for that matter. So this is why this will not take forever. So all this basically then corresponds to a circuit of this form, where you first prepare the first eigenstate, you measure accept or reject, and then you keep on measuring accept, reject, reject, reject. And this way, you basically, in the end, if you're done, you trace out and you end up with a TCP map on the entire circuit on that state, right? And the goal is essentially that this TCP map, if applied subsequently, just like the classical stochastic map for the metropolis algorithm, will converge to the Gibbs distribution in the end. Okay, so. So how do we check that this is the case? So there's a couple of questions we have to answer. So first question, well, does this Markov chain we just cooked up like this, does it converge to the Gibbs state? Because right now it looks really simple, but there are certain problems. For instance, I mean, we just generated a projector back on the energy subspace. So the energy subspace can be degenerate. So it's not really that simple that you only have a classical random walk on the individual eigenstates, but you need to have some mixing within the degenerate subspace. Then the next question is, well, what you also always have to ask classically as well is this fixed point unique, or are there other fixed points you have to look into? And this strongly depends on the choices you make for the updates for the Cs you choose, essentially, right? And then what is the runtime, basically? How is it? Is the Markov chain rapid mixing, which will both depend on the updates and, moreover, on the problem Hamiltonian you consider. So there certainly are problem Hamiltonians for which this will run exponentially long because you can encode QMA-hard instances in them. You don't expect them to solve them in polynomial time. And then the last question one has to think about, well, we're doing phase estimation with a finite number of resources. How does the error propagate, essentially, or how fine can we approximate the actual Gibbs states in the end? Right? So as for the runtime scaling, so we couldn't really prove that we couldn't prove it for a given system. So what we did essentially is we looked at a really, really simple example system for which you know the eigenstates exactly, and then essentially did a classical version of this, knowing what the transition probabilities would be quantum mechanically, and had an estimated the gap for this guy, having an update rule, which is actually very simple, which is just you keep on only flipping the first qubit in the chain. And the funny part is that the phase transition itself really makes this transformation actually non-local over the entire chain. So you can actually generate all the possible transitions you need, which is kind of funny. So in this case, you could see that that independent of the magnetic field in this XX model, that you had a linear, inverse linear scaling of the gap. So the runtime would scale linear for this simple system. Only holds for that system. So in general, we don't know it for all systems. So proving that for a more complicated system is still very hard and open question. Now, I'd like to make a small interlude because we developed a bit of a technical tool set to investigate this Markov chain. And basically, we borrowed from tools that were developed in 91 to bound mixing times and stuff like that from Phil Diakonis and Struck. And what they basically did, essentially, they tried to give mixing time bounds in terms of the chi-square divergence. And which is a nice divergence, which serves as up and bound as the one norm. And what we try to do essentially to investigate this chain is to find a quantum version of this to the non-commutative setting. And the only thing I want to point out there, what basically similar things hold, is that that we need to have an inversion, which is just a non-commutative way of writing rho over sigma. And this actually helps us to define a neat way of quantum detailed balance you can check rather easily. I mean, there are several other ways of defining that, but that way turned out to be quite neat and easy to check for our case. And this condition already ensures, if the chain satisfies this quantum detailed balance condition, that already ensures two nice properties. So one thing is that you know that the entire Markov chain has a real spectrum. And you already know, as you have for the classical detailed balance, that that sigma is the actual fixed point of the chain, right? A possible fixed point. So the only thing, for instance, for such a possible inversion, what you have to check locally is that this holds for the channel in the eigenbasis of your Hamiltonian. Okay, then you can conclude that essentially this is the fixed point. So what you have to do essentially, okay, you have to check it for this entire chain, and now you can think about, well, what the major problem you essentially have is that as I said before, that you have degeneracies, and that P is acting now only as a projector on the energy subspace, and not just a projector on one specific eigenstate. And so you have to just check whether this still satisfies this quantum detailed balance condition to be ensured that the Gibbs state is the possible fixed point of the chain. And so the only thing, which is nice because this condition is linear on all these super operators, so you have to check it for each of them individually. And the only thing that you really have to require is that the probability of drawing a C is equal to that of it's a joint, of drawing that it's a joint. And all the BKs, because they're projecting the same energy, are fine in the end. Now, so the other thing I was talking about is that the fixed point needs to be, we need to check whether the fixed point itself is unique. And this can also be checked. Basically, you can prove that the fixed point is unique, so that you induce an ergodic Markov chain if you would start drawing the C from a universal gate set, right? There's a simple criterion called permittivity of TCP maps you can check, essentially, which basically you apply the TCP map M times, and then there has to be an M after which for any input state, the resulting state is full rank. And if you can check that, then you know that you have a unique fixed point, and that this fixed point is also full rank, essentially. right? And this is given when you start drawing them from a universal gate set. But you're not actually confined to doing that. So if you could think of a physical problem where it's better to draw other gates or so, you really have to check it each time individually. But just for this one, it works. Okay, so what about the errors? So there's two fundamental errors involved. So what you have is the error about the simulation. You need to simulate the Hamiltonian with for the phase estimation algorithm. And well, as Andrew and Barry, they have both shown that you can prove that the simulation time runs better than any power of 1 over epsilon. So we just said, well, you can make this arbitrarily small with a reasonable amount of effort, so we didn't really care about this error. The error we worried more about is the error that arises due to doing phase estimation, right? Because it's not true that you really just prepare that one eigenstate that you really sharply measure one energy, but the pointer variable of the energy can fluctuate. And by that, generate some hop out of your energy subspace and prepare some other state. And the question is, how big is the error that this actually that is caused by that? And there's a nice trick, which was first used by Nagai, Wojcian, and Zhang. What they do is they use the medium method. So what they did is they concatenated several phase estimations, and then calculated the median of the phase estimation results and used that as the final result. By that, you can basically very strongly sharpen your pointer distribution. Even and you only have a confidence interval, and the probability of decaying falling outside this confidence interval decays exponentially with the number of pointers you adjoin, essentially. So, but this is still doesn't mean that it's deterministic, because you will always have the problem when, for instance, the energy falls exactly in between these two energy values, you will still have a probabilistic outcome. You just reduced it essentially to a binary distribution to the nearest ones with an exponential error that falls off. In that case, we could show if you do this advanced phase estimation technique, we could show an error scaling that goes like this, this constant is basically that arises due to the fact that you after a certain step, you have to just choose a certain cutoff value, because you try to reject and reject. And maybe if you're utterly unlucky, you will not be able to reject within a finite number of times. So what you have to do is you have to choose a value and to say, well, I abort my simulation, I start again. And given that you have some constant that corresponds to your overall success probability, the error scales like this. Then you have this R, which indicates the number of bits you use for measuring the phase estimation. And basically, the error is also proportional to the contraction behavior of the chain, essentially. There's a nice tool people have used also for classical Markov chains to bound the errors in terms of these contraction coefficients, which basically says if I apply the chain in the one norm and then measure, so it basically means how fast does the chain contract within the one norm. Right, so that is one. So in that case, if it's we assume for this error analysis that the chain is strongly contracting, so you have a constant which is smaller than unity to give that.
Can you get heat? Right. So you cannot go to arbitrarily low temperatures, right?
In this error, no. With this, okay. This is really rough upper bound for the error. Yes, it looks like this. So you say, okay, the error bound, let's put it that way, the error bound in the number of qubits you can choose scales in your effort, scales linearly with the temperature, because you have an exponential effort for increasing your simulation time. And but the error then decays exponentially fast. So it goes linearly within the temperature. So this is rough upper bound. Yes. So this bound, yes, indeed, suggests that you cannot go to zero temperature. But the same will basically hold true for the classical one as well, because there you also give upper error bounds in that sense. Because otherwise, if you go to zero temperature, then a lot of the assumptions we have made don't really hold, no? Because if you go to zero temperature, you have a degenerate fixed, you have a fixed point that is not full rank anymore, right? So the chain cannot be ergodic at all if you go to zero temperature, no? Because an ergodic chain has to have a full rank fixed point, also in the quantum case, right? So basically, we really carried out the analysis only for finite temperatures in that sense.
What's the definition of ergodic?
I'm sorry, for primitive maps. So that's basically, we said just a primitive map. So epsilon is primitive. So is primitive if for all rho, we have that epsilon, there exists an m, so that epsilon m rho is greater than zero. So you have to have a finite number of integers, so this is a full rank state. Even if, for instance, you start with a pure state, you apply it m times, and you have to be ensured that you have a full rank state. That's essentially the definition. This already ensures that you have a unique eigenvector 2 to the eigenvalue 1, and that this eigenvector is full rank and positive, essentially. Right? So throughout the analysis, we assume that the chain essentially is ergodic, right? Or it's primitive, which you can show when you choose a finite temperature and have a universal gate set. Okay, then to end it all, basically we put a really small implementation scheme for a 2-qubit Heisenberg Hamiltonian. We need 5 qubits to simulate them, because there are some photonics guys that might have been interested in that. And so in that case, it's really simple to have the phase estimation. It's just a control swap, which is the fretting gate. You can really neatly work out all the individual other gates, and you have to work it on 5 qubits, essentially. Right? To that end, thanks a lot. And so we hope that we took a step in towards the right direction of finding a general purpose algorithm, which, of course, general in that sense means that you have a heuristic workhorse algorithm. We don't expect that it always works, of course. Then we have small-scale implementations that one could, in principle, implement nowadays for a 2-qubit Hamiltonian. And so basically, the general theme is basically that this is that we turned the problem essentially into a sampling problem. So there's, for instance, been also a work by Frank and Michael and Ignacio, and they show that actually you can have, in principle, within this framework of dissipative dynamics or general TCP maps are universal for quantum computation, right? And that would suggest essentially that you could also start looking for new algorithms in that direction, in that framework. Well, thanks a lot.
So this coherent reversal technique, yes, seems like it would be just a useful thing in general, but are you able to just state what conditions are what we really need to know and be able to do in order to perform that coherent reversal? If we want to formulate it as a general method, like here's some binary measurement that you want to be able to reverse.
Yes.
What do you actually need as primitives to be able to do it?
I think in the essence you need to just be able to have two Hermitian projectors to implement them, essentially, right? So, let me think. For instance, let's think about it. The group of Adifari, they kind of made use of this of the same trick, essentially, and they really also only worried about this. They call it quantum state restoration, right? It's actually a very similar trick, and their only conditions are essentially that. That you have to have two Hermitian projectors you can implement, no? And which are Hermitian, when after a finite time of measuring them, you will end up in the state you started from. So yes, you only need two Hermitian projectors in principle, I believe, to be able to undo them, to unwind them.
This particular method won't work at zero temperature, but I guess at zero temperature you could always use adiabatic evolution to prepare ground states. So what I'm wondering is there a way to sort of hybridize these two methods to get something that would work better at low temperatures?
Okay, let's put.
I'm reasonably convinced that it should work at zero temperature, but we couldn't prove it for zero temperature, no, in the end. But is there a way of hybridizing, of joining? Well, maybe, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the adiabatic evolution somewhere really is nice if you know that you don't cross a phase transition, right? So maybe it would be easy to prepare a ground state of a Hamiltonian that's in the same phase, and then work your way adiabatically something more complex in the same phase. But I wouldn't really know at the moment how to come up with something where you could basically join both methods together. No, so for instance, I mean the plot we showed, the classical guy. That's not, well, not the classical guy, but for this one. We looked at the mixing at zero temperature essentially, right? So for that one is because it's a lot easier to simulate that essentially, because you can easier check whether you actually converge or you didn't converge. No. And so for that one it worked nicely. So in principle I'm pretty convinced that it has to work also for zero temperature, but all these permittivity results don't hold for zero temperature.
I suppose you have some freedom in the choice of your architect room.
Yes.
So it satisfies the detailed balance condition?
Yes, exactly. So yes.
And the what is somehow the relation between this choice and the performance of the algorithm?
No, that strongly depends. So you could, you could really use a very, very, I don't know, I mean, that is already a very silly update that works, but you could use something that is, extremely, for instance, you could if in the case of a 2-qubit hybrid Hamiltonian, if you only start flipping the first pick, you will never converge,
right,
because you don't sufficiently mix with them. So this is highly sensitive on what kind of updates you choose, essentially. Right?
You have to somehow consider before you somehow input into the quantum
box. Exactly.
So
yes.
How do you do that? Or is there,
well, that, I mean, this is the same thing as you do for classical Metropolis algorithms, right? So the people have to choose reasonable update rules. So, I mean, what I can give you, say, if you draw from a universal gate set, you're definitely sure it's going to work. But there are certainly other choices you can make, essentially, which, based on intuition, might work faster or not faster. So this is the same as for people that do classical Metropolis, the classical Metropolis algorithm, whether you say where the choice of updates really strongly depends on the performance.
Okay. Do you have to know the physics to get the good update?
That would be, I suppose so. Yes. I mean, in a lot of cases, I guess when people do it classically, they think about what would be reasonable updates based on the physics you have. So if you know that the system actually thermalizes nicely in nature, then you could think of what possible moves are that are quite reasonable for that.
So if there are no further questions,
okay.
Let's thank Christian.
Okay, thanks.